This is Rinku Sen. I'm the executive director of the Applied Research Center and the publisher of our magazine, Color Lines. I want to welcome everybody to the Compact for Racial Justice Forum call on race and immigration. Just a couple of quick housekeeping notes for people who have been on these calls before. These will be familiar. I want to remind everyone that this call is being recorded for ARC's own use and for the use of other media outlets. We will post a recording of this phone call along with the recordings that have already been made of the calls over the last month and a half and of future calls onto our website when they're done. So tomorrow, by the end of the day, you should be able to download an MP3 file with this phone call on it and refer other people to it. If you have questions, we definitely want to hear them and address them. And we'd like you to send them to us via email. We've already gotten some questions, but people who have others that arise during the course of this call can email them to compact, that's C-O-M-P-A-C-T, at arc.org, compact@arc.org. And we'll be going through your questions and presenting them to our speakers, Eric Ward and Marisa Graciosa. For those of you who aren't so familiar with us, the Applied Research Center is a racial justice think tank. We bridge policy research, media advocacy, and community activism. We are hosting this series of Compact Forum calls because we feel like it's very important to create a space to share ideas about how to apply a racial equity lens and framework to the many, many policy proposals that are coming out of DC and coming out of our state capitals. Proposals, many of which will have big, big implications for people of color and for closing the racial divide in this period. So at a little over 50 days into the Obama administration, at about 60 days, we are having this discussion about race and immigration after an election campaign and an electoral period in which people, both major parties, Democratic and Republican, were largely silent about immigration. And it was quite rarely mentioned after the primaries. Other things that we know have happened since then, since the Obama administration took office, is that Janet Napolitano has been appointed as the new Secretary of Homeland Security. And we know quite a bit about Napolitano's record from Arizona, where she was the governor. And that record is mixed. It's not particularly clear that Napolitano will be entirely on our side in terms of how immigration reform and our current immigration laws are implemented, but there have been some at least encouraging small signs lately. There's tremendous pressure on the Obama administration to do something fairly quickly and certainly to move forward on comprehensive immigration reform this year. But there's also been some pressure for him to do stopgap measures that would at least ease the pain a little bit. One of those ideas is to get him to sign an executive order stopping the raids, another to look deeply into the immigration detention system. So while all of that kind of questioning and pressure is being directed toward the administration, we have to remember that the restrictionists on the in the immigration debate are carrying on. They definitely have not stopped. Today, I believe, or tomorrow, the Center for Immigration Studies is going to release a report claiming that wages and working conditions have improved in six communities in which major raids happened between 2006 and 2008. And they're now beginning to make the argument that our enforcement policies have, number one, caused attrition among undocumented people and people are just leaving, and number two, that the enforcement strategy has actually made things better for native-born Americans, black and white, and mostly black and white Americans is who they're talking about. On our side, in terms of the pushback, there have been other recent events. I just want to list three of them that around which there's been some real momentum as a way of framing the discussion moving forward. So one is the movement against Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who is the sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona. The Justice Department has now begun an investigation of Sheriff Arpaio, particularly on racial profiling grounds and on grounds that he essentially abuses inmates in his jails. The second thing that's happened is that Napolitano actually agreed after the raid in Washington State that happened about 2 weeks ago, agreed to do an investigation into the way that that raid was implemented. And while that is not her saying, yes, I'm going to stop the raids until we know more about how they've been working and what kinds of abuses might be taking place, this is definitely some movement toward questioning the raid strategy and the raids as a piece of public policy. In general, there's been increased race talk in the debate, not just from the restrictionists doing their usual scapegoating and dividing people from each other, but also on the part of the national immigration policy groups and research groups in Washington. Of course, that kind of pointing out of the racist rhetoric in the immigration debate has been going on at the local level for a long time, for many years. But finally, after the 2007 immigration reform failure in the Senate and the way in which that debate through 2006 and 2007 was so explicitly and blatantly racialized by the restrictionists, that has finally pushed some of the groups in Washington, D.C. to finally come into line with a lot of local groups in pointing out the extremist roots of much of the restrictionist argument and position. So in this call, we are not going to deal very specifically with the policy bottom lines. We're going to hear from Marisa Graciosa about what the scene looks like in Congress and at the federal level now. In general, we're not at the point yet where we can really talk about what immigration reform bills will really have in them or not have in them, what those bottom lines are going to be. We're probably 2 or 3 months away from that part of the debate. But what we want to focus on now in the short term is the need to keep disrupting the racial rhetoric in the immigration debate, the need to humanize immigrants as we talk about the policy solutions that are going to make things better for everybody, and the need to connect the bad apples, the Sheriff Joe Arpaios of the country, to the larger system. So that's what we need to do in the short term. In the medium term, we'll need to fight quite hard for a new immigration policy in terms of what is possible now, this year in 2009, 2010. And then ultimately, we want all of this work to lead up to the country being able to have a much deeper and longer-term debate about our broader approach to immigration and about the possibility of actually moving toward a much more open immigration policy. So after those framing comments, I want to introduce our two speakers. The first person who's going to go is Marisa Graciosa. She is the campaign coordinator of the Fair Immigration Reform Movement, which is a national coalition of grassroots organizations fighting for immigrant rights at every level of government. The firm is led by its member organizations in a collaborative and participatory structure that brings people together across lines of race, issue focuses, and geography. Our second speaker is going to be Eric Ward. Eric is the national field director of the Building Democracy Initiative of the Center for New Community, which he joined in 2003. He is the organizer of Which Way Forward, a national framework for policy and program decisions about the relationships between Native-born Black people and immigrants. Just before Marisa begins to do her presentation, I want to remind everybody again that if you have questions, you should email them to compact@arc.org. And we'll do our best to make sure that they get in front of one of our speakers during this call. Marisa and Eric will talk for about 8 minutes each, and then that should leave us 30 or 35 minutes to deal with questions. Okay, Marisa, you are on.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much, Rinku, and to the Applied Research Center for inviting me and FIRM to be a part of this call. It's quite an honor. I want to tell folks a little bit about Well, Sprinku has told us a little bit about FIRM. Again, FIRM is based out of the Center for Community Change, which is an organization we just celebrated our 40-year anniversary and have really focused in the last few years working with organizations in the field to improve and build the field of organizing, because we believe that it's really and truly the way that we make change in this country. A little bit about myself. I've worked for the Center for Community Change for 2 years now and am based in Chicago. Like many of the people on the call, I'm sure, I come to the immigrant rights movement from my own personal story and my family story of coming to and immigrating here from the Philippines to the United States. And I was born in Brooklyn, New York, but grew up in much of my life in small town, little white cow town, Wisconsin, where I was able to experience firsthand the ugliness of what racism can look like and can affect a family and can affect a community, but also how within a community, when we work together, that an immigrant family, for the first time being introduced into a small community, can actually find friends and support in a way that allows them to succeed in this country. So I come to the immigrant rights movement from that background, and from both knowing how difficult it has been to assimilate and to become a part of this country and to show that we are truly contributing, but also a person that knows that that there's real hope in what can happen. I'm going to talk about three things today as it relates to immigration reform. Number one, a little bit about the lessons we've learned from the immigration debate in the past. The second thing is to dig down a little bit deeper into what we think the opportunity is for us winning just and humane immigration reform under the Obama administration and in this year. And then finally, to talk a little bit about what it is that we can do together in order to win, and what it is, especially as we, as people who are organizing in the field and have direct contact with the people who are affected most by what's going on, can contribute and make sure that this immigration reform becomes a reality. So the movement for immigration reform has been going on for many, many years. It's had its highs and its lows, but I do believe that we are positioned to see a comprehensive immigration reform in this new year, but only if we actually learn from the past. I mean, folks have already seen how anti-immigrant forces are gearing up and are using basically what is folks' economic discontent and their anxiety as a way to message, it put anti-immigrant messages out there in order to stir the fire and have people build upon their fears as a way to stop any possible debate on immigration reform. But we know that we as a movement have also kind of played into this, especially in 2007. We know that in 2007 we kind of fell into this ourselves, found ourselves using talking points, things that said immigrants are doing the jobs other people won't do, or using arguments that local law enforcement resources should be directed at real criminals, or even signs that we used to have at rallies that said, "I'm not a terrorist," saying, implying that if good, hardworking immigrants weren't the terrorists, then somebody else was. And so we know that those kinds of messages actually divide us, and didn't work in 2007 at all, and they're not going to work now. And instead, the kind of messaging that we need to use and the kind of policies we need to be fighting for need to make sure that they unite all oppressed peoples, and that when we're talking about immigration reform, that we are talking not only about immigrants and the immigrant fight, but also how, when we're changing policies, that it is good for everyone and that it can affect and be good for native-born workers as well as foreign-born workers, citizenship for all, jobs for all people. Now, we really believe that we have an opportunity this year in the Obama administration. Rinku has already articulated a lot of these building blocks that we've already seen with Napolitano within 24 hours of rapid response from the Bellingham raid, calling out for an investigation into what happened in Bellingham. One other thing that Rinku didn't mention, with the passage of IKEA in S-CHIP that lifted the five-year bar implemented during President Clinton's welfare reform in 1996, that's another big step for us. Now, those are only signals now that the Obama administration is sending. We know that during the campaign, Obama said that this was going to be a priority in the first year of his administration. He's continuing to say that, and in fact, he was quoted on El Piolín and saying a lot of these things on Spanish language radio, but what we haven't seen so far is a real pronouncement about their intentions to make this happen this year in English language. We also know that he's hedging a bit, and when he talks about, well, he's quoted as saying, politically it's going to be tough, it's probably tougher now than it was, partly because of the fact that the economy has gotten worse. And so we're already seeing that instead of thinking of immigration reform as part of the economic recovery, it's being positioned already as something that may have to be dealt with after we get out of the economic crisis. We want to be able to flip the script on that. So at the end of the day, the opportunity that we have within the Obama administration really relies on the field. We believe that there's an opportunity in this year, and the timing really looks like this, that if we're able to secure these administrative changes in the first 100 days, a real end to the raids, a real crackdown on 287G agreements like what we've seen with Arpaio, and a more public announcement from the Obama administration, we should be building up the pressure over the summer, not only on the Obama administration, but locally, with the congressmen and senators that we're going to need their votes in order to pass this. So that once we get to a legislative fight in the fall, post-August recess, that we're in a good position to show that there's real pressure and mounting for this. So what do we need to win? There's three things that I think that people can do immediately. That's number one, we want to engage in unifying tactics that open up the conversation once again about immigration reform so that it is at the top of the agenda. Many organizations across the country are going to be engaging in a swarming tactic of going to every single congressman and senator that they know and setting up meetings during the April recess in order to sit down and say, this is what just and humane immigration reform looks like to us, and we believe that it should and can happen this year. We need your leadership. So we're promoting folks to go ahead and set up those meetings, and let's make sure that they know this is a number one priority for our communities. Number two, we're going to be engaging in really new and innovative organizing. The Obama administration, the Obama campaign actually led the way with this in using new technology, and we at the Fair Immigration Reform Movement are trying that out too. We have launched a mobile action network that utilizes text messaging. We know that through cell phones is a major way that our communities get information and can also, since almost everyone has a cell phone, it's a great way to take action. So the ask is to actually, you can go to our website, anewdayforimmigration.org, or you can simply pull out your cell phone and text the word justice or justicia to the number 69866. Again, the number is 69866. The word is justice or justicia. And to get up-to-date information, this is one of the ways that we got the rapid response mechanism out there post-Bellingham raid so that people could quickly take action and call the White House. And then finally, for us to dig down deeper into really what, and to be explicit about what the moral message is that unifies and doesn't divide our communities. Many folks are still working on this messaging to make sure that it is consistent and good with the changes in the economy so that we are making the argument that immigration reform is part of the economic recovery. And I think many organizations are working on that, and talking points will be coming out very soon. So thank you for your time, and be open for questions later on the call.
Great, thank you. Marisa, can you actually say that text number again, and
and just...
Sure. Again, the number is 69866. I'll say it one more time, 69866. And all you do is text the word justice if you want to get updates in English, or the word justicia if you want to get the updates in Spanish. We're working on trying to get some other languages as well. But this is the main mechanism where we're going to be communicating with people in order to do rapid response in case anything hot happens, and also to communicate with people through the summer and the fall in case we do have legislation so that people can contact the White House directly and get phone numbers for their congressmen.
Great. Thank you so much. So, Eric, I want to go ahead and get your presentation in. I want to remind people that if you have questions, you should email them to compact@arc.org. We've got a nice pile of questions coming in, but we want more. So, Eric, you're on.
Thank you, Renku. This is Eric Ward from the Center for New Community based out of Chicago, and I wanted to just cover 3 points briefly to discuss, you know, where the anti-immigrant movement is today, you know, where the next fight around immigration reform will take place, and resources that we would like to offer that would be useful. Shifts in the American political landscape have opened a window of opportunity to advance a values-based discussion on immigration reform that includes a racial equity frame. For too long, immigrant rights advocates have had no choice but to engage the opposition on their own rhetorical turf, stepping into preset existing frames that were created by the Federation for American Immigration Reform and their anti-immigrant network. And this has left little room for real debate, much less a civil conversation, and even more to the extreme, the opportunity to talk about racial equity in regards to immigration reform. As the fight for immigration reform begins to take a new life, we believe that grassroots organizations must be prepared to reframe the conversation and America's concept of immigration reform. Currently, the anti-immigrant movement was successful at shifting the terms of the debate. And I think all of us would agree that currently the center of the immigration debate actually rests firmly on the political right side of the social and political spectrum. In a large part, this speaks to the fact that the Federation for American Immigration Reform and its satellite organizations have gone rhetorically unchallenged for far too long. Some of the most extremist anti-immigrant groups currently enjoying mainstream status and respect have created space for their extreme views in mainstream American civic life. They have been able to successfully create the illusion of a wedge between African-American and immigrant communities, between labor and immigrant communities, and to create the illusion that the majority of Americans are not looking for a solution in regards to immigration reform. In short, advocates for humane, sensible immigration reform have been kind of pushed from the center of the debate. And now what we have is an opportunity to recapture that center and to shift the national discourse. To do that, I think it's important for us to look at 3 things. One is, where is the anti-immigrant movement today? The anti-immigrant movement is not the same movement that it was 2 years ago because things have shifted. When you look at the anti-immigrant movement, it's important for us to understand today that it has shifted its own message framing. The messaging that it is using currently is based around resources and the economy. Attempting to create and strengthen its movement based off the economic and resource crisis that's occurring in the United States. You see this with full-page ads that the Federation for American Immigration Reform and others have run in The Nation magazine, in Mother Jones, Harper's Magazine, The New York Times, I think to just name a few examples. Radio ads by Californians for Population Stabilization out of California. TV ads put out by the Fair Front Group, Coalition for the Future American Worker in the Chicago area and in Florida. It is going to be important for us not to be caught up in the current frame that the anti-immigrant movement is pushing out. I know that it's going to be a challenge for those of us on the ground, but I would argue that in dealing with this resource economic frame, that we take a step back, and that in taking that step back, that it is critical for us to do three things. The first is to decode that message and the rhetoric that the anti-immigrant movement is putting out. The anti-immigrant movement is afraid and running from its associations of racism, and it's why it has turned to this economic resource frame. It's important for us to decode that frame and to throw back at them their associations with political extremists, including white supremacists. Second, it's important for us to understand that the anti-immigrant movement has chosen as a strategy to wedge the African-American community from the immigrant rights community. The reasons are fairly clear. One is that the Congressional Black Caucus federally has one of the strongest voting records on immigrant rights in the House of Representatives. Secondly, African-Americans symbolically are seen as a moral voice when it comes to issues of race and racism in America. Now, we should understand that the goal of the anti-immigrant movement is not to recruit all of us African-Americans walking around in the United States. The goal is simply to recruit enough individuals to give the veneer of not being racist, of not having associations with political extremists. It's incumbent in our work to find real coalitions with the African-American community and with African-American organizations. It's important in our work on the ground to point out the real public policy impacts of anti-immigrant public policy on the African-American community. Secondly, I want to point out that the anti-immigrant movement, while looking to stop any kind of federal public policy legislation, has made a tactical choice to fight this out locally on the ground. They have spent the last year putting a lot of resources into reframing their messages, but also consolidating their base. It's important for advocates on the ground to engage the anti-immigrant movement locally, but to identify local cuts, particularly around racial equity frames, that link to any potential immigration reform policy or anti-immigrant public policy that is impacting the local community. We have to be prepared to push back and to be pushed by the anti-immigrant movement as we challenge them on their associations with political extremists, including white supremacists. When we push on that issue, we should expect a huge backlash. However, we can't give up the first time we throw out that message. We have to be consistent. We have to be tenacious in delivering that message at the local community to our audiences. It's important that while this fight takes place on the ground, that we hold local, state, and federal officials accountable for aligning themselves with the Federation for American Immigration Reform Network. If they are using model policy that's been put out by FAIR and its network, we need to point this out to the broader public over and over again. Finally, in closing, we think, and it's our estimation, that any effort to reframe the conversation on immigration while advocating for immigration reform will fall short without a plan by local groups to take on extremist elements of the anti-immigrant movement in their communities. We have to do that, understanding that we have to also offer a contrasting, positive, and aspirational vision for Americans to respond to. Only by taking on the opposition elements will there be enough breathing room for new frames, messages, to enter and flourish in the marketplaces of ideas. To help that, we do want folks to know that the Center for New Community is available to work on messaging in response to anti-immigrant activity and helping you to research background information on anti-immigrant groups and leaders, and to let you know that twice a month we publish Fair Exposed, an email newsletter that keeps track of the latest activities of the Federation for American Immigration Reform and its satellite organizations. And you can receive that by emailing us at info@newcom.org, and Newcom is N-E-W-C-O-M-M. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. This is Rinku. I just want to attest to the truth of what Eric is saying about the sensitivity of the anti-immigrant opposition to having these racial extremist roots exposed. A couple of nights ago, I debated the research director from the Center for Immigration Studies at Brandeis University, and it was only when I got to that part in my talk of discussing CIS's connection to the white supremacist that my opponent actually started yelling during the middle of the debate during my presentation that I was a liar. So I can guarantee that in no other time of debating the anti-immigrant side on the data or on the piece of policy have I ever had anyone yell that I was a liar. So they're clearly sensitive on that point and not really prepared completely to deal with it. He clearly didn't think that I was going to bring it up. So just a little shout out for that. Let's get to some of these questions. So one question that people are asking, this is from Susan Starr. She is saying that we know from the work of social psychologists like George Lakoff that when people have a dominant story in their head, the story might be, for example, that too many immigrants makes life worse for U.S.-born people. When they have a certain story in their head, the statistics and the data don't actually change their mind. They don't disrupt that frame. And so Susan is saying, if we know that the that people who already believe that immigrants don't belong here are not going to have their mind changed by the data and the facts, then who then you know what should be our approach to having that discourse move differently, both at the local level and at the national level. So, Eric, I think I'm going to ask you to start on that.
Okay. Well, I think I would say three things in response to this. The frame is a dominant frame. One is that it's grounded in kind of a racial history of America that has sought to divide, I think, people who have much more in common simply based off of their alleged racial makeup or their nationality or ethnicity. You know, the second piece is that the frame has been successful because it's been repeated over and over again, I think as Lakoff points out about frames. You know, the third, though, is that you know, the frame has been most successful simply because it hasn't been challenged. It hasn't been challenged with an alternating vision of America. And so even what I would say is that what happens, because we're talking about racial equity, when we bring up the issue of race, our stumbling block is that most of us get nervous immediately, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, race is a very complicated subject in America. None of us have been adequately adequately prepared to have a discussion revolving around race. We've been taught that you know, you have to be an expert to speak out against the issue. And I think that the anti-immigrant movement has successfully taken advantage of that. To respond, I think that it is important for us to do three things. The first is to begin to consistently respond. Now, it doesn't mean we're always going to have the best message, and I think to find those best messages, you know, we need to turn to groups that are producing, I think, the Immigration Policy Center out of D.C., which is producing excellent information, the Applied Research Center, Renku, and I think the Center for New Community, America's Voice, the Southern Poverty Law Center. But what we have to do is to become better at just delivering a counter message, letting people know that the frame that they're hearing over and over is simply not true. The second is, more importantly, though, is that we have to hold elected officials accountable for acting on and embracing information that is simply not true, that makes our communities worse for everyone. I like to, you know, I point out in the African American community that at, you know, the bottom level, you know, if, you know, as an African American, let's say you really don't like immigrants. Well, you know what? While I don't agree with you, that's fine. But you have to understand that allowing the passage of anti-immigrant public policy at the state and federal level negatively impacts African Americans. African Americans have been disenfranchised from the vote from anti-immigrant public policy. We have been denied access to social services because of anti-immigrant public policy. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's important to remember that nearly 10% of the African American population doesn't have access to the documents needed to prove its citizenship in the United States. And that is something, a very significant issue for the African American community. And so understanding that the anti-immigrant public policy is much less about immigrants than it is about public policy that seeks to ostracize individuals based off their race, based off their class status in this country. And those are the messages that we need to start getting out to the American public.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Marisa, my next question is for you, and this is Joe Lenoir, who is the director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration in Berkeley, California. Asking about the serious policy issues that divided the immigrant rights movement in 06 and 07, things like what level of border enforcement to support, for example, and what we should say about guest worker programs. I think we can predict that the policy debate in Congress over the summer and into the fall will be about a bill that includes a lot of enforcement. I think we have to just acknowledge that things are going to start there. And I'm curious, Marisa, about how FIRM is planning to develop its positions, what kind of process it imagines going through to get to clarity on those specific pieces of policy negotiations as they happen.
Thanks for the question, Gerald. So on specific questions around guest worker and border enforcement, let me first say that I'm a field organizer first and learning more and more about policy now. But what we have put in place with the Fair Immigration Reform Movement is a policy task force made up of our steering committee, and we've put out position papers on each of the major elements of a just and humane immigration reform that we'd like to see in this year, including legalization, including an end to the family backlogs, and also including positions on future immigration and border enforcement issues. And you can find more of that information on our website, fairimmigration.org, www.fairimmigration.org. And a lot of time and energy has been put into creating those position papers from members of organizers and members of the immigrant organizing committee of FIRM. So in those papers, basically what we lay out, especially on the guest worker provisions, are that we wouldn't want to see anything like that. And then we know that that was a huge divisive point for us in 2007. I think the question then becomes for us in reopening this debate in 2009, where labor stands on this, and many folks on the call may know that labor is now in conversations about how they may be more unified in this new administration, so that the issues that we all are working on, healthcare, Employee Free Choice Act, as well as immigration, that a unified labor front, especially on the issue of guest worker, will really help to make sure that we go in with the same talking points, with the same policy demands for 2009. On the question of border enforcement and enforcement in general, we've tried to create a more open process in trying to come up with our policy papers. In particular, the newest member of our steering committee is the Border Network for Human Rights, and I believe that those who work on the border were voices that were marginalized and not included as we had those conversations in 2007. And so we at FIRM are really dedicated to working with organizations with a grassroots base to make sure that policy positions are created in a way that is open, that is part of a debate, but is also is inclusive. Now, all of that said, we already know that those are going to be some of the sticking points that are going to come up in 2009. But what we don't have yet, and what is a strength at this point, is that we don't have a bill. And so that allows us to be unified right now, but on what we know we won't disagree on, and that is that we want to see a stop to the raids that are separating families, and that the coordination between local and federal law enforcement is unjust. And so the question is, how do we use the unity that we do have now in order to build up the pressure so that this conversation is even on the table in this year that they say they want to take this up?
Great, thank you. There's a question, kind of a follow-up to this, from Tarso Ramos at Political Research Associates, asking whether we have any indication that Napolitano and Obama, the administration, are moving away from the 95% border security approach to immigration reform that we've been talking about for the last 3 or 4 years. Can I just get a read? We won't hold you to it, but can I get a read from either Eric or Marisa or both on the administration's sort of attitude toward the proportions, how much enforcement, how much actual reform?
I'll let Marisa answer that question.
Marisa, do you have a sense of that?
Honestly, I really don't. It's a really good question. I would want to save it for folks who would be better positioned to answer it. What I do think it points us towards, though, is that we need to have an answer when it comes to when it comes down to it. The question is going to be, okay, so then how would you do enforcement? And we have not always had a good answer when it comes to that.
So this is another question from Miguel Galdon at the Equal Justice Society, and he's asking whether immigrant rights groups have relationships with the different kinds of media to be able to get in there and reframe the debate. So he lists liberal news shows like Rachel Maddow's show on MSNBC, Spanish language media, ethnic media. I would not leave out the alternative progressive media. One of the things we do know is that that progressives were not totally unified on the question of immigration reform throughout the last couple of cycles. There's still a lot of ambivalence among progressives and liberals about what our immigration policy should be. So takes on what we need to do to get our message out to the various kinds of media more.
This is Marisa. I have some ideas around specifically ethnic media.
Great.
I'm sure Eric can speak to some other pieces, but I do think that there is a lot of great and creative work that has and can be built upon for the future of this movement. Like I said, I mentioned the innovative ways that we need to organize in using technology such as text messaging. And ethnic media was a huge driver in 2006, not only to drive turnout for the marches, but in 2007 to be the way that people really learned how a bill becomes law, you know, on Univision or from their local papers by following what the intense action that was going on in Washington, D.C. Following that in 2008, ethnic media was critical in helping people register to vote, get out the vote, and then actually get the materials and the information that they needed in order to vote wisely. And so I think that, you know, even small towns with small immigrant populations have some sort of newspaper or radio station that we need to be partnering with and using in order to not only get the information out about what the possibilities are for immigration reform this year, but also to help people take action and to be connected. And combining email, text messaging, radio communications, and what people see in their local newspapers is really going to be the kind of the combination of communications to our base that will help people go from simply being informed to taking action.
Great, thanks. We just have about 13 minutes left on this call, and the questions are coming in, so I want to try to get to as many of them as we can. We know that we won't be answering all of your questions exhaustively during this phone call, so I want to encourage you to check back on the website, on the Compact website, tomorrow for additional resources and links and so on. Eric, there's a question from Jonathan Blazer at the National Immigration Law Center, raising this piece of criticism from someone else. This isn't Jonathan's position necessarily, but the question here is someone named Tom Berry, who Jonathan names, says that it's not really enough for pro-immigration groups to take the extremist line around the anti-immigrant organizations that have such an end to the media and to Congress. I mean, the Center for Immigration Studies is considered an absolutely mainstream, widely quoted expert on empirical research related to immigrants. And so this question is about whether the pointing out, whether there are any downsides potentially to the strategy of pointing out extremism. Is it possible that we'll get people fixated on the white supremacists, for example, and then they'll think, well, I'm not one of those, and so I don't need to do anything. I can just, you know, keep watching TV or whatever.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I would say, you know, this, that I think we cannot base our criticism measured off whether a movement is successful or not. And let me give some examples of that. Segregationists at one point was pretty mainstream accepted thought in America. And if we held back our criticisms of that movement during that time based off of their mainstream acceptance, I think that we would have done both an injustice to those who were seeking to expand civil rights and racial equity in the United States, and I think we would have done an injustice to our society as a whole. I think that what we have to understand is that the anti-immigrant movement is not successful because there's validity in its message. It is successful simply because it has been active at pushing its message consistently over the last decade unopposed. And so it has been able to give itself the veneer of mainstream acceptability. I think that the second piece is that I think often we become nervous about taking on, I think, some of the most, you know, extreme forms of anti-immigrant organizing that are occurring in our communities, simply because we don't feel comfortable that we have the tools and resources necessary to make a successful argument. I think what we have to understand is that the anti-immigrant movement has been able to position itself in such a way that it has been able to sink not only immigration reform that is racially equitable, but it has been able to sink, you know, the bread and butter issues of everyday Americans, that this is not simply just an anti-immigrant movement, that this is a social movement that is using immigration as a vehicle. And at the end of the day, if we do not confront this social movement, if we pretend that we are the only social movement on the field, we will continue to lose any attempts at expanding public policy gains in this country that betters the lives not only of immigrants, but of everyday Americans.
Mm-hmm. Great. We have another question from Zachary Norris at Books Not Bars. I think a really important question right now, given the pushback that has happened around Joe Arpaio in Arizona, the investigation that has been started about his use of 287G funds, that is federal funds for local police to do immigration enforcement with. Zachary wants to know what connections are being made between progressive criminal justice groups and those working on immigration reform against the raids and detention and so on. Is that, are there any local coalitions that you all know about? Is there an agenda that we could build around undoing 287G and at the same time undoing, you know, mandatory drug sentencing, for example?
I was going to see if Marissa wanted to respond.
This is Marissa. I'm not sure if I can speak to all parts of that question, but what I do want to highlight from it, one thing in particular that we didn't get to mention earlier is that in the heat of what of the marches and the incredible actions that were being pulled together in Arizona by our great allies Endelon and Acorn on the ground, there was also action taken in Washington, D.C. with Representative Zoe Lofgren and Representative Conyers putting in, they're the ones who took the initiative actually with the Judiciary Committee in order to put in a letter to the DOJ and to Napolitano and eventually leading to the DOJ calling for the investigation. And I think this shows us in many ways the connections that even our leadership are making between what's going on with immigrants and what's going on with many people of color in this country, and that, you know, Representative Conyers understood that what's going on in Arizona is racial profiling, and if you can call it an immigration issue, you can call it what you want, but he saw it for what it was, and so the connections and the real work that can be done between immigrant communities, African-American communities, where instead of immigrant communities coming to black communities saying, hey, come jump on our bandwagon, instead the conversation should be opened up to how can we support each other in the struggles that link us. That is a much more meaningful conversation and one that will take us further and much, much further past an actual immigration reform bill. And so many organizations are working on this, on making these connections locally. With FIRM, we've developed a curriculum called the Crossing Borders Curriculum that Deshaw Hockett from our organization has developed and is available online in order to help start those conversations on the grassroots level. And we know that we've worked on that with organizations like CASA de Maryland, the Florida Immigrant Coalition, New York Immigrant Coalition, in order to start those conversations that can lead to stronger coalitions on the ground.
Great. Eric, I just want to see, this is the last question that came in. It was the first question that came in, but it seems good to end with, which is about how people who are not immigrants can be allies to this movement and how they can both prepare themselves to do that and what kinds of actions they can take. But the question actually came in very specific to Latinos, how people who are not Latinos can be good allies to Latinos, but I'm going to broaden it and just see if Eric and Marisa, you want to take the opportunity to say some closing things around that question.
Thanks. This is Eric, and I want to thank Applied Research Center for having me on today. I would say briefly that, you know, this debate that is occurring right now around immigration reform is about something much larger. So while there are very specific policy struggles that will take place and will be fought out at the federal level and on the ground, I think it's important for us to remember that if there were not one single immigrant or refugee in the United States today, that we would still have an anti-immigrant movement. And what we have to understand is that for the anti-immigrant movement, this is not about immigration. This is about who is an American and what will America look like? And the policy impacts will impact every single American, whether they are white, whether they are African American, Latino, Asian, Native American. And so what we have to understand is that by creating a racial equity frame around this issue, it allows us to do something new in this country, which is for the first time to come together across ethnic and racial lines and to formulate what we believe and what we think it means to be an American, and that Americanness is based on opportunity and based off of equity, and right, that it reflects our public policy. And so what can we do specifically is that we need to identify how these public policy issues impact all of us, and we need to get that message out consistently to our neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Marisa, do you want you have like a minute and a half to make some closing comments?
Sure. One of the best books people I've ever heard for just and humane immigration reform is a white farmer from Iowa, a leader with an organization called the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. His name is Larry Ginter, a corn farmer. And the argument that he made on videos that we've worked with him is that when he saw undocumented Mexican immigrants coming into Des Moines, Iowa, what he actually saw was that those families were being drawn to the United States because there were no jobs in Mexico. And the reason, the push and pull factors because of NAFTA and because of our global economic policy were the reasons why, in many ways, Larry Ginter, the white farmer from Iowa, was more and more connected to and understood the struggles of Miguel, the undocumented immigrant working at a factory in Des Moines. And so there are more stories and more ways that we're connected to each other if we look to find those allies. And when we come together around those values and values that of our community, that we can actually be building together towards what we believe is a more just society. Thank you.
Hello, this is Tammy Johnson with the Applied Research Center. I want to thank everyone for coming to this call today, and I especially want to thank our two presenters for the wonderful information given to us. I want to encourage everyone to go to our website at arc.org to download a lot of the resources that you heard about on the call today and to sign the Compact for Racial Justice so that we can continue this work with your support and getting the information on how we can advance a racial justice equity framework and all of the issues that we care about. And so we hope to have you back on the 31st of this month, where we will talk about race and civil rights. Thank you. Have a great day.